Welcome to Directly Speaking, a direct-to-consumer marketers podcast. Our podcast features marketing leaders in the direct-to-consumer and e-commerce space. We get to learn a bit about their brands and the stories behind them, compare notes on trends and challenges in the industry, learn how they approach their marketing journey, and hopefully a little bit about them personally. I'm your host, Marcus Lancaster, head of direct-to-consumer strategy at Quad. I'm excited about today's guest, Kyle Smith, head of healthcare marketing at Noom. Kyle joined Noom in 2022 to launch and lead marketing for Noom's fast-growing commercial business, Noom for Work, which offers Noom as a health benefit for employers, health plans, and healthcare organizations. Prior to Noom, Kyle was head of transformation marketing at CVS Health, developing go-to-market strategies for the company's most innovative solutions, including behavior change, chronic care, digital health, virtual care, and connected devices. Early in his career, Kyle spent 15 years at Digitas, leading the CRM practice and serving top brands like American Express, Aflac, Bank of America, Goodyear, Harley-Davidson, Merrill Lynch, Morgan Stanley, and Pfizer. Kyle, I'm so happy to have you with us today. And you've got a great track record. I think you're just a great guest to have with us, especially because there's something a little different about your brand. Noom is such a well-known brand in the B2C space in terms of the way that you serve the consumers, but you've launched a completely new initiative at Noom, and I'd just like to dive into that a little bit.
Yeah, it's been a nice, really fun road the last couple of years, where actually Noom itself is about a 15-year-old company. Still, people see it as a startup, but it's actually been around for a few years, and it tried to go commercial first, sitting down with big companies like, you know, Aetna and Cigna and United Healthcare to get them to try to buy Noom as part of a big benefit. And when you're coming into a business screen and really don't know the healthcare business, it's very hard to penetrate that business. We essentially fell flat on our face doing that and ended up pursuing consumer as the alternative option, which actually I think was a brilliant move on our part, because we put a lot of investment into it, obviously, in the past couple of years, millions of dollars in advertising, really taking over, you know, social channels like Facebook to get millions of people to start using Noom, engaging with Noom. And that's now carried over onto the B2B side, which brand is half the battle, because most of these, you know, benefits that your employer is buying that they put on your intranet site to use, no one's heard of, no one engages with, no one downloads. And so as the benefit manager, you know, your job is to buy things that people want to use. And it gives Noom that competitive leg up to actually come in with a consumer facing brand that people know that they can actually get for free.
That's interesting. Because one of my questions that I had made a note was, what were some of the early challenges in entering the B2B space? It sounds like on try number two, one of the significant ones you were able to get past is just consumer awareness.
Yeah. And actually that awareness is what fed into it. So organically, you had benefit managers and buyers at businesses who were Noom customers and had said, "Hey, Noom," they'd call us up and say, "I just lost 30 pounds on your product. How do I get this for my employees? Can I buy this? Do you sell this?" And we actually took that inbound demand to give us the early indicator that, okay, it might be time to go back and penetrate the commercial market, because there's definitely a need. People are using it. They're now becoming evangelists for it, and it's becoming that much easier. So a lot of our first sales that we had for really large and mid-sized employers were because the benefit manager was a customer of Noom.
Gotcha. I think you might have said when we chatted before that something like 85% of companies are self-insured. You know, and I don't know if that aligns loosely directly with the size of organizations, but, you know, what does your customer look like? Big, small, self-insured, not self-insured?
Yeah, it's growing exponentially. So in the beginning, our customers were fairly small businesses. Obviously, the ones that have a more shorter sales cycle, easier to do business with, more one-to-one. And we've gone up market dramatically with 10,000, 25,000 plus employee businesses. And those can be a range of all industries. It really is nobody that's off the table when it comes to a self-insured employer. And for those that don't know all the insurance jargon in the business, self-insured essentially means that the employer is taking on all that risk. So if you, an employee, get sick and go to the hospital for an emergency or whatever the case may be, a lot of that expense that's being billed back through the insurance is essentially then being billed straight to the employer to own most of that cost burden. So, you know, it's interesting to look at like some of the big automotive industries. I think like, I don't know which one in particular it was, but their benefit manager had said one day, you know, we spend more money on healthcare than we do on the raw product of the steel that we use to build our cars. So it's a tremendous expenditure that they're always looking for finding ways to cut those costs through preventive care or some other way to keep their employees healthy.
Well, you're diving right into, I think, the central tenet of your offering to businesses, mm-hmm. because I'm sure that the ability to prevent chronic conditions or prevent serious health as a result of somebody being overweight is a big part of the offering. Do you guys quantify that in terms of what the savings to an insurer is?
Yeah, it ranges depending on like, you know, what kind of health plan you're on and how much you're paying out for those types of things. But we've got it down to almost a linear view of every point in BMI you drop is directly related to hundreds of dollars in medical cost savings per year, as well as prescription savings per year. Because you can imagine if you're someone who's, let's say, over 200 pounds, you lose 5% of your body weight. 5% is considered to be like the initial sweet spot where you start to see health benefit. And you might be paying money for lower back pain medication that you no longer have because your frame is lighter and therefore you don't have to bear the weight onto those bones and joints. It could be for other instances, you go to the doctor less. So it's this really beautiful line that goes straight down for like literally every point you're dropping, there's a direct correlation in reduction in use of prescription medication and reduction in use of going to the doctor. And that's real savings that comes back to the employer through good. Actually, it's not through avoidance that we're trying to keep you away from the doctor if you need them. It's just the simple fact that you're actually healthier, so you don't need these unnecessary visits that you might have done before.
Got it. So that's a central part of the value proposition to your potential customer is that they're going to save money on their health plan or mm-hmm. their healthcare costs. And the second benefit being predominantly that your employees are going to be happier because they're healthier.
Yes,
is there
exactly.
anything I'm missing?
That's about right. You know, there's very soft metrics that are very hard to determine. People like to use the term, you know, presenteeism. When I'm at work, am I really at work? Am I engaged? Is my head in the job? And people try to use that metric when you look at weight loss, when you look at, you know, behavioral health as somebody who's more engaged. Very hard thing to measure. You can do surveys and things like that to see how it works. There's also absenteeism on top of that too. People miss less work because they're not going to the doctor's office or staying home or calling in sick. So that's a more raw metric you can use. But yeah, that plus medical cost savings, it's all about reducing cost of care at the end of the day.
Got it. Fascinating. Okay. So talk about the way that your job works from a marketing perspective. Really easy sale when a benefits manager calls you up and says, can I buy this for my company?
Yeah.
But how are you reaching the people that don't know that this about Noom for Work and how that you guys serve that market?
Yeah. It was a fun marketer's dilemma because obviously one of the great things about Noom coming in as a marketer on the B2B side is all the heavy lifting that the B2C part of the brand has done. So there's a lot of brand recognition that comes along with that. I think we're about 49% aided brand awareness. But when you look at trying now to gain a bit more credibility with that Noom brand, with a buyer on the commercial side, you now have to decouple this thinking that Noom is just this fad thing or something that, you know, I'm not going to take very seriously because it doesn't seem like it's very medically driven or backed up by, you know, a medical team doing all these different things. It's considered well-being at the core. And so the biggest challenge for me was, number one, how do you take our brand much more seriously, that we actually have medical backed data to back up the work that we're doing clinically. And then two, actually to make a whole new brand that can decouple the consumer side of our business marketing strategy with the business side, which is where the Noom for Work brand came out to be. Because when you think about the buyer types and you think about the buy cycles and how you shop for benefits, it's a wide range of audience members. On the employer side, you've got benefit managers. they're being influenced by consultants like a Mercer or an Aon or a Willis Towers Watson who are advising them on what to buy. And in a lot of cases, they just trust their advice. So we're trying to, you know, market to the person who's the buyer. We're also trying to heavily market to the person who's the big influencer of that buyer. And then you've got on the whole other side of employers, other big levers that we pull to get to that employer. Number one is a health plan. So Aetna, Cigna, United, because they want to buy Noom to add to their benefit package and then make that part of their offering when they want to bring someone on board. And then finally, is a pharmacy benefit manager. So think of, you know, the Caremarks of the world and other folks. When you get your formulary, it's on your little card. You get your prescription. You get a prescription for a certain price. That's all baked into your health plan and with your PBM. And they want to offer products as additional health benefit solutions to retain the customers that they have, because they want to show that they're adding value, not just by giving a better rate on a drug, but that there's some sort of health benefit to back that up too.
Follow-up question there would be, you're marketing to probably one-to-one to those big providers, but relative to the companies and the influencers, what are some of the vehicles you're using to connect with them? How are you reaching out to them?
So the fun part coming in was that we had no brand. We had no website. We had zero things. And if you go to the Noom website today, it's a very well-engineered growth marketing engine for consumers. Everything that we've done on that site has been tested, tried and true to get you into that app and answer questions to eventually pull out your credit card and buy the product, which is very tough when you want to try to get somebody who's actually searching for research on your company and how to like understand how your company works, because they end up in a buy flow trying to buy a product, not getting information about what Noom is all about. So the first part was just even rethinking our homepage and saying, how do we maximize the value that we want to continue to get from that consumer volume, but also now bring and cater to this new audience who's coming to our site that actually wants to learn more about the products and services that we offer. So we added, you know, a header bar, we put in a Noom for Work page. Within that page, we started to build out the different segments and the groups. So kind of just the core blocking and tackling you would have just to use, you know, your website as a catalog. The second part was actually getting a ton of proof points. And that was probably the best part about coming in early, is that you've been doing this for so long with millions and millions of customers. We already had so much data at scale that people in here didn't even know the treasure trove they were sitting on. So we could start just pulling our own data from our own users, which is essentially its own in-market testing, and getting instant value add benefits around, hey, what's the adoption rate of Noom? What's the engagement rate of Noom? What's the ability to actually lose weight? How many people lose weight in the first 5 months or the first 10 months? Started to create white papers and reviews and studies, started to take a lot of our big studies with huge, complex medical, you know, journals and de-jargonate them, turn them into like a nice 3 or 4 page white paper that we can send out that people can actually understand. So the whole first year was building credibility through having good research, good background, having a brand that people could actually start to understand that there was a decoupling between the business and how it works. And then doing a lot of knowledge transfer and roadshow through a lot of our experts going to big conferences and events where most of these buyers actually sit, so that they really understand how our product works.
So a lot of event marketing in that regard. And a big part of, I guess, that challenge was developing content that was business appropriate in that first window. It sounds, you know.
Very much so, because you do start to pull into the medical cost savings piece of it, and figuring out like, what does that mean for me and why do I care, you know, as a buyer type that you target in there. So for, like I said, the self-insured customer, the reason that they become self-insured to begin with is because they hopefully know their employees and their business well enough that they can buy the right kinds of services to give the right kind of benefits to get the maximum value out of it. So they're hopefully trying to like do a better job than the insurance company would do, because you can be a fully insured customer where you pay them a fee to do that for you. But the thought is, hey, I can do this probably cheaper. I can do it better. You know, let me do it myself. But the problem you bring on board with that is now I've got to manage all these vendors and deal with them. So part of our value prop also is this nice one-stop shop.
Fascinating. Okay. Last question about the marketing kind of campaign would be, the B2B marketing cycle is complex. You mentioned it before, you know, how you have to reach both the influence, you know, many, many touch points within the organization. Mm-hmm. How do you navigate that? How do you reach those people?
You do a lot with industry publications. Obviously LinkedIn was a whole new platform that we really had never used or leveraged within Noom. We'd always been focused on consumer platforms. So really understanding the right kinds of targeting to use within there, how to grab people's attention, how to kind of draw between the brand that we knew from the consumer side with the B2B side to get them to get to know our B2B business a bit more. Events and sponsorships is big. There's big conferences every year that you get a wide range of folks to attend. There's also a lot of invitation only type of events that you do. We've done really well in those events, made our case really strong. And then the rest of it is just trying to optimize our search, which is actually always a fun challenge because you also have a very strong consumer spend that now actually battles your B2B spend. So you got to make sure that the keywords that you're using are complementary.
Oh, yeah.
And for one path, that you're not actually cannibalizing yourself along the way. So having a strong search strategy has also been really important for us.
Yeah, I guess that it makes good sense given the very different nature of your target audience, how SEO would be a big part of that. Fascinating. Okay. So now you've sold to a company. Do you help them market to their employees to engage?
We absolutely do. It's the second part of our value prop. So it's like we talk about the first sale and the second sale. So the first sale is getting an employer to buy us, but the second sale is actually getting people to use us. And that's actually where we also shine, where compared to most well-being products that most employers buy, I'd say the average adoption rate's about 2%, 2.5%.
Okay.
Noom average is 25.
Wow.
And I think a big part of that obviously is the fact that our brand is well known. So again, the consumer brand is helping us, but also we've taken a lot of the lessons learned from our growth business where we do thousands of experiments every year, trying to optimize every touch point we do with the consumer. And just putting that right into our B2B work stream and saying, okay, here's how we're going to best optimize our emails for our email touches. We'll optimize with SMSs. And even with some of our top employer customers that are health plans, we do social targeting on like Facebook. So we've been using it as a big channel to drive, which most companies can't do just because they don't have the recognition or the tentacles.
And wow, 25% engagement is startling.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
Especially when you tell that med cost saving story, because it's one thing for a company to say we can save you a lot of money, but if only 3 or 4% of your employee population is using it, you know, what's the point of even like putting all the work in? So the fact that we can do it at scale means you're getting a huge impact on the employee population. And when you look at the future of health in America, it's quite scary. I mean, by 2030, half of the adult population is going to be obese, which is over a 30 BMI. And obesity leads to chronic conditions, leads to sickness, leads to cost. And so now that that's become a big trend, we've actually been pulling in another product, which is GLP-1 medication. So like Ozempic and Wegovy and the things that are in the market about the injectables, which are having a huge impact on reducing weight. But what's on every label and what's, you know, discussed less is that you can't just take the drug and get away with it. You need behavior change to go along with that. And that's kind of Noom's bread and butter. So if we can teach you better lifestyle to maintain and change how your body is actually reacting and changing with the medication, we can actually then also wean off the medication.
I understand.
So that you're no longer attached to it.
Makes good sense. In fact, Noom is, as a product, you're at a very timely moment in our country's evolution, as it were. Mm-hmm. I just had the opportunity to read Outlive by Peter Attia. It's a longevity book. And one of the things he says is that medicine 3.0 is about prevention, because so many of these conditions become interrelated, diabetes and cancer and, you know, cardiovascular disease and Alzheimer's, and how important it is to avoid those things. So it's really cool. It's a great product, a good story.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's been a fun thing for using branding to bring that out and actually make prevention, you know, attractive. Which I think in most businesses, it's very hard to make it attractive because usually the products that are owned. So the fact that you can give them something that they want is a nice offering for prevention.
So cool.
All right. Well, let's transition to you. It's obviously been a sprint for you since you've been there. How do you go about segmenting your day? What do you, tell us about you as a marketer and how you approach your business.
Yeah, it's jam packed, and we still have a pretty small lean team, and we do a great job at Noom borrowing off of our internal resources and areas of expertise that we have. So I have a strong product marketing capability and a strong demand gen capability, but then for a lot of member marketing, we can pull in from our teams. We're heavily dependent on our creative teams to help drive what we need to make and create for a lot of the. A lot of the really impactful ads that we're creating and some of the pitch pieces that we're doing. But for the most part, day begins with the check-in with the team, figuring out what's the most important thing. We're still a very short-term driven organization, something that I'm trying to help change a little bit, especially in B2B when you have this 18-month sales cycle. But we have quarterly goals that we're trying to achieve and attract for ourselves. So we kind of check and see how we're doing against those goals. All the work that we do is mainly done through in-house tools and services. So, everybody has direct access to our database with Looker, with Mixpanel, with being able to look at real-time web traffic. And almost all of our marketers are empowered to make changes on the fly as they see fit. So we'll just see how trends are happening and what kind of adjustments we can make. Other half is talking to a lot of prospective customers and really getting involved in a lot of RFPs because they're all different. They all have different asks. And then the latter half is kind of just figuring out how we can optimize each of the channels that we use. So we'll review our emails. We'll look at those by industry. We're now starting to really do a ton of segmentation when it comes to within the employer segment. How do you segment the engagement for an employer who's a 25 plus versus a 5,000 plus? How do you attract the employees within the employer if you work at a construction company and you can't be reached via email versus somebody who works in an office space and can be reached via email? And then what are the channels you can use in between to actually engage their attention? And what are this like messaging that you can say that's more relatable to what they do every day for how that works? And then the biggest part is just looking at growth, just looking at how we want to grow our B2B business. We're heavily focused on our health plan business, our PBM business, and with this new product with new med and GLP-1s, spending a lot of time and effort on the value proposition, the value story, and gotcha. Getting that product off.
Where do you draw your inspiration from? I guess in a way, it looks like you're in terms of how you approach these companies, it's really like a healthcare brand more so almost than a B2B seller. I don't know. That question isn't well stated, but where I'm going is, where do you get the ideas? What trends do you follow?
Oh man, I follow all trends. I follow what's working on the consumer side of the business a lot. Actually, most of the trends I even get are inspired from our own internal consumer team because they're looking at what's working on the consumer side of their business.
Got it.
We actually have a tremendous and super deep Slack channel where I get a lot of inspiration actually from our customers. We have coaches within Noom that talk to these customers every day. And they will just put direct quotes every day from customers. So we have thousands of quotes for every interaction that we have. And that becomes almost the best research vehicle to start to figure out what inspired you? What got you to do this differently? How do you want to do it differently next time? A lot of focus groups with those people and how they work with them.
Gotcha. Well, where do you draw inspiration from personally? And how do you recharge?
I'm a competitive cyclist, so I do a lot of bike racing.
Killer.
So I race road, cyclocross, mountain bike. And so I get a lot of my inspiration by riding alone and thinking and listening to podcasts and just half the time, I actually only listen to podcasts when I'm get really bored. But when you're on a 2-hour bike ride and it's 6 o'clock in the morning and it's you and the woods. You get a lot of thinking done on those rides and coming back with just something fresh and new and exciting that you never would have thought of. The bike helps me do that a lot.
Fabulous. So that keeps you both. That also helps keep you healthy and your mind fresh
exactly.
as well.
You have to live the brand.
What brands do you admire that you like to see, you know, or is there anybody you'd love to see us interview on the podcast?
Oh man, that's a good question. Brands that I admire, it's always tough. It's always a tough question for me to answer because I always feel like you end up admiring something and then you become underwhelmed after the fact. It's like, you know, it's always the wonderful facade that you see on the outside about, you know, how people present themselves, and you actually walk behind the doors and you realize, oh, it's all just smoke and mirrors. But I do think that, you know, being a cyclist, there's actually, you know, I like, you know, how Zwift has done a great job penetrating their market. It's a indoor cycling app that basically hooks up to your CompuTrainer, and okay. They've built global community through just exercise.
All right. Well, if you could tell Kyle's younger self one principle that would have made you more successful, or you that you wish you would have learned earlier, what would it be?
Do ChatGPT in its infancy, I think, and don't play catch up. Get in really early. I think that's going to be the biggest thing for obviously the next couple of years is how ChatGPT is going to work with marketing, and I, you know, always be a student of things like that. Don't wait until it comes. Save time for yourself to keep learning. I think, especially like in my role, I can get so knee deep in my own day to day. I very rarely reserve time to just step outside of what we're doing here and figure out how to do something else that can make my job better. So always just having that time carved out. I think it's important just to block it and to keep it precious and not give it away.
That's a great lesson, you know, because as your career expands and your influence grows, there are more and more demands on your time. And therefore,
right.
Carving time to make yourself a better version of yourself is difficult sometimes.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
Fascinating. All right. Well, if somebody wants to get in contact with you, what's the best way to connect?
They can just email me direct. It's super easy. Kyle.Smith, K-Y-L-E, at noom.com.
Great. Kyle, thank you so much for the time today. It's great hearing about your business. It sounds like you guys have a really good thing going at Noom for Work, and I look forward to staying in contact and seeing you grow.
Likewise. Thanks so much.
Thank you for joining us today on Directly Speaking. We hope that you guys enjoyed the content and enjoyed the opportunity to get to know Kyle a little bit better. We hope to have you again with us soon. Until then, keep selling. Have a great day, everybody.